Hey everybody, it's Mary Lou Tyler. Today I have a special show for you. You know how we're always working on sales process, sales enablement, trying to get all of those records coming into the top of the pipeline organized, categorized. Well, today's special episode is with Dr. Diane Hamilton. She's a speaker, author. She has been an instructor at multiple schools, thousands of classes. She's a nationally syndicated radio show host. And she is going to talk to us today about the human side of selling. Now, the reason why I asked her on the show is because we do all this work to get to the point where we have our first dialogue with our prospects, have our first meeting, have our first conversation, and we bungle it. So not always, but we do it enough and we work so hard to get to that point that I really want you to listen to Dr. Diane today about the types of things that she specializes in, like emotional intelligence, like communications, and help us kind of, you know, set aside the actual process pieces for today and really focus on the human side of selling. Welcome, Dr. Diane. It's so great to have you on the show.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Very good. So tell us, you're a specialist in emotional intelligence and communications. How does that align with the sales roles? And now my guys are all business developers, net new business. They're really trying to start conversations with people we don't know. And we leverage technology to help us get there. But how does your expertise align with, once we get there, how do we handle that first conversation?
Well, it's interesting because I spent many decades in sales, and I've had all different types of sales jobs, from very sophisticated training that got you very well prepared to the office where they hand you the yellow pages and say, here, dial for dollars. This is your territory. And so I've seen just about everything. It got me interested as I started teaching. I do teach some courses in marketing and sales-related things, and then I wrote my doctoral dissertation on the impact of emotional intelligence on sales performance. And I looked at subprime sales individuals for that particular research. But I was interested in the components of communication and interpersonal skills and that type of thing and how it impacted their results. And there's no surprise, really, that you do need to have very strong interpersonal skills to do well in sales. It's kind of interesting because I worked for a company, a sales company, where they gave us personality tests to determine our personality type before we even got the job. And then they made us post our personality results on our cubicle so that we all knew how to interrelate to one another. Because if you were a blue, you were a certain personality, red and green and yellow. And it in sales, we all were reds and greens, and every once in a while, a yellow would get in, and it was almost like the movie Pushing Tin, where either people are betting as they're watching to see if the guy's going to be able to get from his car up back up to work because he's so stressed out, because we didn't think the yellows would make it. And the reason why they didn't do very well was because they were more analytical, and they really weren't meant for sales jobs as well as the more direct reds or the more extroverted greens. Mm-hmm. It's not that they were inferior in any way. They were just mismatched for their jobs. So I looked at a lot of the personality issues behind sales in my research, because I think that there's a lot that people need to do in terms of self-reflection to see where what skills they have and where they can develop in terms of their personality. There's a lot of research in emotional intelligence, which is, I think it's really important to understand that. But I also think that understanding things like the Myers-Briggs assessment, where you learn about whether you're an extrovert and introvert and all that, can be very useful for salespeople, because sometimes we tend to think that everybody thinks like we do, because that's how we think. You know? And once you learn how other people prefer to receive information, you can adjust and present information in that way. And that's so important in the sales call, because if I'm an extrovert and I'm calling on an introvert, I'm doing it my way. I'm turning that person off completely. Mm-hmm. And that's got to be something that they have to think about. If that's their first and only chance at this person, they better connect in a way that they want to be connected with. And that's what a lot of people make a mistake in that area.
Well, are there, you know, what, right now, the way we work is that we're working with a lot of contact records, and we finally dwindle it down to the top 10, 20 that we want to put into our calling sequence so we can and contact them. How do we know when we say hello, what kind of personality they are? Are there cues? Is there a rhythm? Is there a way we can tell within the first 5 to 10 seconds what kind of personality we're dealing with?
It's a lot harder on the phone, but a lot of it is how they respond when you ask a question. An introvert is going to take a lot longer to respond. They're going to think about it. Introverts process and then they speak.
Right.
You know, they don't do it at the same time. So the speed at which they respond will be one good clue. And the kind of questions they ask will be another clue, is if they're a thinker versus a feeler. If they think, if that means on the Myers-Briggs kind of personality assessment, if they're thinkers, they're interested in you giving them more solid-based data and facts, and they're less interested in making decisions based on their values.
Mm-hmm.
So pulling on their emotional heartstrings is not going to work with that person. So if they're starting to ask you data, give me data, give them data. Don't try to appeal to them in an emotional way. And I think you can get some of these cues right off the bat from just asking a few questions, because what you're trying to do at the beginning is find their pain. And the mistakes a lot of salespeople make is not finding out what they need. They just start selling at them right off the bat. This is what I have, blah, 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 blah. And they spit out all this information when maybe that's not anything they even want, and they're wasting time.
You know, and we get some cues when we're doing our email, because the way that our rhythm works is that sometimes we send emails first, or we blend emails, then telephone, you know, try to leave them a voicemail or whatever. But we do get some cues in the email, because people may respond back to us saying, you know, I really want more technical information about this. I want to understand others who have gone before you, and actually come out the other side successful and transformed. So we do get a little bit, but is there some pre-work we can do based on, or have you discovered based on the actual role or title? Because my folks are mostly business to business. So we're selling into companies that are certain role based. For example, when I sell to marketing people for my work, I know that they're more touchy-feely. They're more personal.
They are.
In their goals. Whereas if I'm talking to a sales ops guy, it's more strategic. You know. So are there cues like that that we can, when we're developing the actual profiles for the people we're trying to call into, that we can, you know, sort of at least get 80% there?
Well, I agree with you completely on the marketing professionals. I just attended the Forbes Summit for CMOs in Coronado last November. And they definitely have a unique way of looking at things. Their pain right now is trying to reach people in so many different ways with so many different platforms and personalizing content. And they have a real obvious emotional issues attached with what they're trying to do. So it depends on the product, of course, of what you're selling. Do you have a particular product that your listeners focus on, or is it mixed?
It's all over the map. I mean, some are doing actual widgets and some are doing services. But what we teach, or what I like to instill in my folks, is we have to do a profile, what we call it persona profile development for sales, where we really are looking at the person in that role. And we're trying to figure out the pain, like you talked about before, and then I've given them an extra three ways to look at the pain. It's strategic, financial, or personal. So we make some guesstimates based on whether this particular pain point affects our prospect, either strategically, meaning a business-related issue, is it financial, or is it personal, meaning growth, or something to do with movement in the company or culture of the company. So, you know, but I'm curious if there are other things that we can think about as we work on these persona profiles, because this particular, doing this exercise, in my opinion, propagates throughout our entire sales conversation. It helps us understand which case studies we should present to them, like you said, based on their profile. It helps us understand and preempt objections they may have that are during the sales cycle itself. So, you know, and I have some steps of things that I want them to look at, but, you know, you always wonder, are there other more human elements, like the the Myers-Briggs you were talking about? Are there other things that we should be looking at for profiling the person that we're trying to get that first conversation with from your research that, you know, we may be missing?
Well, I think you can use a lot that you find on social media and different websites to find out more about them. I mean, the more you know about, you just think of a job interview, you're going to research everything you know about the company before you go in, because you want them to show, you want to show an interest in them. So anything you could find out about them personally, without sounding creepy, like you're stalking them, you want it to be, you know, genuine. Anything you could find out about the company's mission, their strategic plans, because that's what you're focusing on, is helping them achieve their goals. And if you don't know what they are, I mean, you're wasting your time in the call. You need to know everything about this person. I had a boss that was wonderful when I was in sales about just looking around the room before we even said two words to anyone, knew what school they went to, checked out the plaques, checked out the, you know, whatever it was in the room. He could figure out what their sports team, because he was so perceptive and he just paid attention. And mm-hmm. The minute you make it about them and you show an interest in them, it makes such a huge difference, because you're not just there for you to sell something. You're there to create a relationship. And I mean, I've had jobs. I was a pharmaceutical rep for 15 years, where that was a long-term relationship. It's not like, here, buy this car, I'll never see you again kind of thing. You're in there every week, every month. It's something that you have to develop. So you don't want to start off by having it be all about you. You want to, it depends on the type of sales they do, I guess is what I'm saying. If it's a shorter term sale, you have to go a little higher pressure. If it's a longer term relationship, you have to build that relationship, because you won't get back in another time.
Well, I definitely think for our audience, we're developing a relationship, but some of us are just long enough to hand it off to a closer, a quota carrying sales rep who closes the deal. But over half of my audience is prospecting, closing, and servicing accounts. So there's a big relationship builder at the same time. But this first call is, you know, has stymied us for so long on, you know, how to prepare properly for it, how to understand the opening of that call itself. And the more we can get intel going into the conversation, the better. So I think you're right, your suggestion about the research of looking, you know, in forums or group discussions with this people and these roles, just like you said, when you were at the conference, you got the gist and the vibe of it's an emotional time for marketing because of all the different channels that they have to worry about now with the internet. Right. So what other things have you seen or do you recommend that we look for and to help us be better on that first call?
Well, I think being prepared, having notes right in front of you, having a good customer relationship software is important to make sure you have everything right there, because if you don't have answers to anything about them right there, that's going to be a problem. I used to type my notes while I talked to them sometimes, so I would be able to have that for the next call. So I think you really have to keep really good notes, and I know you don't really want to multitask, but you can do some things at the same time to free up some time. The thing is, I think for the first call, just starting off trying to figure out their pain is going to be your major focus, because if you start off thinking, I want to sell this, you may be selling the wrong product. And a lot of salespeople have multiple products, and they may be going in the completely wrong direction. Mm-hmm. So the first thing, if you don't know their pain, or you may assume you know their pain, I would focus on that first. I would start with what I know about them and maybe say you're impressed by something or you've read about them, or start it off on a positive note. And in any sales, you know, even they're going to give you a negative response to things. If they say something negative to you, of course, you can't just jump in and say why they're wrong. You know, you've got to support,
yeah, exactly.
support what they've said. Give them some kind of like, yeah, I understand. You know, if other people have agreed with you, or give some, you've got to support before you limit them, as we learn in sales, right?
Right.
So a lot of salespeople lose people because they just limit them right off the bat. They don't say, you know, you have a really good point and other people maybe would agree with you, and give them a little bit of basics. You know, yeah, my competitor, they do have a good product, and that's why we use some of those things in our product, but we've improved it by, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to learn the process of developing the relationship, and you have very little time sometimes. And I never had less time than when I was a pharmaceutical rep, because they give you 1 minute sometimes as you're chasing them down the hall. And it's tough sometimes in certain industries. And when I dialed for dollars as in subprime sales, you have very little time. The telephone is a lot more challenging. You have to develop that you're a presence. I did get a lot of people. It's funny, because one of my stories was when they were still faxing. You know, I faxed these guys so many things every day, and at the end of my fax, it always said, if you don't call me, you're losing money. And every once in a while, I get somebody who's, okay, I got to know why, I'm so sick of seeing your tagline. Sometimes they break down just because you bug them to death on some topic to give you a little bit of an opening.
So, yes, as I call pleasantly persistent.
That's a nicer way, a much nicer way of putting it. But there's just, It depends on the industry. It's really hard to give a blanket answer that is applicable to all sales jobs. But I have worked in real estate. I have worked in lending. I have worked in pharmaceutical sales and different types of sales. And it is all different depending on, you know, so that's why shows like this are so great and what you do is so great, because they can pick and choose the things that are applicable to, mm-hmm. to their industry and their type of sales.
Yeah, I definitely. You know, I heard you say the word process, and of course, that's my love, is process. Is there a process that we can put ourselves through for preparing, or for when we're actually in the conversation, that we hear certain things and we react a certain way? Now, I mean, I don't know if there is or not, but is there some type of process in the communication aspect?
Well, I mean, in pharmaceutical sales, I mean, they taught that, like I said, you know, instead of limiting them right away, you would support them, limit them. They had a certain sales process. But I think that in terms of what you can do is just create your own process based on your industry of what works. I recommend that you go to the best person in your field and find out what works for them. I always think having a good mentor is part of the process that works. I mean, I had in subprime, I can remember one guy, he came in at 11 in the morning, the rest of us are at 8, he'd leave at 2, and he killed everybody on sales, you know, and you're like, what is this guy doing? I sat in and listened to his calls, and he was just so conversational, and he just, right off the bat, you could tell he was an expert, just his tone. I mean, even a lot of people, the new salespeople, have difficulty with that. They don't feel confident. They have to learn to fake the confidence a little bit until they make it. And actually, there's a great TED talk. I'm trying to think of the, I think she might have even called Fake It Till You Make It, about how sometimes you have you have to portray a certain image until you actually become it, which is kind of in contrast to Susan Cain's book about introverts, which was called Quiet, which is also a great TED talk, her talk. But I don't think there's a whole lot of introverts in sales. So I think that you probably would do better to listen to the first TED talk about how you can portray confidence and to the point where people are going to listen to what you have to say a lot more openly than if you act like, you know, this is, I really need this kind of, and more like it's in one of your first calls, even if it is your first call.
Yeah. And we have, because it's the telephone, It doesn't matter if you're 20, out of college, talking to a CEO. It's a mindset change of you meeting that CEO at his peer, at that peer level. And that's one of the things that's so important for us, is because we're not doing face-to-face sales in many cases. We are on the phone. The tonality, we know from research, is 75% of that conversation is based on your tone. It's not being perfect in your wording. It is about enthusiasm, smiling on the phone, having that conversation with confidence. And like you said, I think the main way to get there is role-playing, is listening to people who have these great conversations, mirroring what they're doing as much as possible, adding in your own style as you start to feel more confident. Is that really the best way for us to get better at this first conversation?
I think so. I mean, I've had some mentors give me advice that made me very uncomfortable. I can remember in subprime sales, I had a wonderful boss, but she was tough. And I wasn't a tough type of a personality. I was more of a relationship kind of a personality. And in the mortgage sales, you get some of these tough guys. It was not a lot of women in that at that time that were used to just, you know, roughing it up. I mean, it was a Mad Men kind of a thing on the phone. I can't explain it compared to today. It was a lot different. And she listened to me and she goes, just tell him this is what it is. And if he doesn't like it, too bad. And I'm like, why? I just don't talk like that. You know, but she made me do this for this phone call. And the guy got really mad. And he's like, nobody talks to me that way. And, you know, and I wasn't really being mean. I just kind of put it the way she said it, you know, well, this is how it is. And if you want to do it, let me know. You know, I mean, it was more mm-hmm. of that type of thing.
Very direct.
And yeah, but he kind of got mad and hung up. And then later ended up being my best customer. He kept calling me back because he respected me after that. So I wow. think it depends on the industry, how tough you can be or how you should be. I mean, I think you learn from the people that she was obviously really good in this job. Yes, she was the leader in it, and she's one of the best leaders I've ever had. And she gave me good advice for that particular situation. Not that I'd say that would work in every situation, but mm-hmm. That's why I really think you've got to find the proper mentor for that industry. Because you do that to a doctor, you're never getting back in his office again.
Right.
If you're a pharmaceutical rep. So it just depends on the industry. And I think mentorship can't be rated. I mean, it's just like the top thing you can do to me.
Right. One of the suggestions I like to make with my audience is that if you're selling like to a CMO, for example, then go mm-hmm. to your CMO in your company and role play with them. You know, do it by role, because we have, luckily for us, we're sometimes talking to 3 to 5 different roles before we can actually get in the door. We're trying to navigate through the company. We're talking to multiple personalities, trying to figure out which one of those is going to let us get our toe in the door. So we do have to be a little bit of a chameleon, depending on who we're talking to. And you know, right. this conversation is great, Dr. Diane, because I really want people to understand that we are going to change our delivery based on who is on the other end of that line. It's not that we're changing ourselves. It's just in that moment, we are really focused on the caller, the person we're speaking with, and trying to get them feeling comfortable to trust us so that we can do what we need to do to get in that door. And the more we practice, the better we're going to get at it. That's what I'm hearing from you.
It's true. And I recommend practicing videotaping yourself. We did a lot of that in pharmaceutical sales. A lot of details we did videos, and we would critique each other. So mm-hmm. not just have you look at it, have somebody else look at it. And it's tough sometimes, and it's pretty intimidating for a lot of people right. to do that when they're new. But it's a very important thing, because we do things that we just have no idea we're even doing until you see it on video. So,
yes.
I mean, now that you have the iPhone and different ways of just simply recording yourself, it can't be any easier. And I think that that's a key thing to do, to just kind of look at the things that you're doing and think of it, put yourself in their shoes, which is a big part of empathy. Think like they are thinking, which is a big part of emotional intelligence. Mm-hmm. Back to where we were. So I really think that doing that would be a huge step in improving your sales presentation.
So tell us a little bit about the radio show. What are the topics of that show? And I'll put in the show notes where people can listen to you. How often is it going to air? And what's the topic?
It starts next month. So I don't have all the information for you yet.
Okay.
But it's the Take the Lead. So it's about leadership and communication and just about anything that leaders deal with. And it could be a leader, could be an entrepreneur, could be just all levels of a lot of the stuff we talked about today. Salespeople, all groups can really mm-hmm. benefit from it, because we're going to go in a lot of different directions. It's going to be I think 10 a.m. Eastern time. I don't really have all the information for you yet, but you'll be able to find it on my site, which is drdianehamilton.com. So that's drdianehamilton.com. And I do have some really wonderful people that I'm going to have on the show right off the bat. Some of my the top 30 under 30 list of people that Forbes voted the most influential of the 30 under 30 are going to be some of my guests. I've met some wonderful people from working at Forbes, and I hope you get the chance to listen to that. I do have a video interview with Ken Fisher that you might find interesting, that if you look up Dr. Diane Hamilton and Ken Fisher, who is the billionaire behind the guru genius behind Fisher Investments. That's on YouTube.
Oh, perfect.
And right. And then there's also something that your listeners might want to see on YouTube. I spoke for Forbes Mentor Week. If you look up Dr. Diane Hamilton, Forbes Mentor Week, it's all about the future of the workplace, but it talks, I speak about just the millennials and different generational conflict issues that I think would be very helpful.
Yeah, especially, you know, a lot of the roles for the business developers are the younger crowd, because it's usually an entry-level sales position. Besides following up on leads coming in, it's another position in sales that grooms you to become, if you want, an account executive that's going to be more of a closing type person. Mm-hmm. So this position typically is held for younger people, generally, not always, but you know, they're coming out of school. They're not necessarily enamored with the telephone, and a lot of our work is still done heavily reliant on the telephone, although email is becoming a good conversational piece. But to get, you know, 15 emails equals one phone call in my world. So really, at some point, we really need to embrace the phone and maximize the way we have conversations. So I think
I was just going to say, I had one more piece of information that I think that if you're getting millennials and younger people listening to the show, that one of my books would really tie in well to learning a lot of the stuff we talked about today. It's called It's Not You, It's Your Personality. And you can get that on Amazon. And in that, I give a lot of tips of how to deal with different personality types based on not actually having to take the MBTI, the DISC, all the different personality tests, emotional intelligence, but the kinds of things you would learn had you taken that, and how to use that to interact with other people. So I think that would tie in really well with that younger generation, because it was a book that I wrote with Toni Rosblatt, who is my daughter, and she helped make it focused for the younger generation, because I think post-boomers would do really well to learn that type of thing.
Oh, yeah, that sounds great. So it's called It's Not You, It's Your Personality. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, folks, make sure you get that book to download and listen to, because I think that's another area where, again, we're trying to start these communications with people from a cold status. I mean, they haven't necessarily opted into us. They may not necessarily be aware of who we are, and we're disrupting them. So the more that we can really align our conversation to what is important to them, but be able to switch modes really quickly based on what we're hearing, and listening is a big part of this, then we're going to be more successful in generating those meetings. Would you say so, Dr. Diane, that's the core of it?
Everything, yes, I agree.
Well, very good. I just appreciate so much having you on the show today. And I'll put all of the links that we talked about in the show notes. And once we get the radio show, I'll add that in as well for our audience. In the future, though, if they want to find out more about you, the Dr. Diane Hamilton website is a good place for them to go.
Right. DrDianeHamilton.com, and most of the social media sites, Twitter, LinkedIn, everything, Dr. Diane Hamilton, all one word without Dr. spelled out. So just DrDianeHamilton.
Very good. Thank you so much, Dr. Diane, for your time. Really appreciate it.
You're welcome. I enjoyed it.